Good afternoon, and welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
Hello, Willis.
Hello, Aaron.
So, this week was a red letter week. The full disclosure at our house is, let's see, I got a new tooth on Monday. That was exciting. And so my first world dental problem is over. And we got hot water on Friday. Two solid weeks. American Home Shield still gets a D. We'll give them a D because we actually do have water.
But yeah, it only took them 14 days. You know, that's a strong D.
The really good part is we met Robert Gutierrez of Hot Water. His name of his business is Hot Water Plumbing Hero. And I got to say, he was the Hot Water Plumbing Hero. You can find him actually at Hot Water Plumbing Hero. I believe it's .com. It's not on his card here. But I'm going to post it on the deal for today, but it's 888-482-4287, and they're here in Reading. So if you need hot water, look up Hot Water Plumbing Hero, and Robert will come and solve your problems. And despite American Home Shield's dilly-dallying, he was on them, like on them, to get that done. So it wouldn't have happened as fast without him. So anyway, free advertisement of the week goes to our ability to shower. Yay.
Phew.
Yeah, yeah, it's been spectacular. In our own house, actually. We did shower for the last 2 weeks, just not to scare you too bad, but it was, roving around with a towel and a bar of soap.
Thank you for doing that.
It's like, oh, come on. We did it for you, Alex, even though we're in a different room from you. You could have dodged us. All right. That's all the happiness we have for you. The happiness is now over. We are moving on to the bad news, but I gotta say, timely news. So all we're hearing about right now is, all about gas prices, gas. And I just have been kind of concerned the last couple of weeks. I guess concerned is a nice way of putting it, that all of the things that are going on with Iran and all that, everybody will say, oh, that's why the gas prices are going up. Out here on the West Coast, that is not why. And if this is the first time you're kind of hearing that that's the case, we have set up a kind of a subdomain, or it just goes directly to this issue, and it's gascrisis.org. It is on the We the People Radio website, but it's gascrisis.org. Gets you there fast. And we'll take you to our three guests for today. Professor Michael Miché. He is at USC. He is the associate professor of the practice of management and organization. And his bio and all of his information is online. And I think he has limited time, so we're not going to fool around with that. But he's been at USC since 1997. So he didn't just get there and he didn't just start looking at this. And Stan Ellis is an assemblyman in the California legislature. That is his part-time gig, I guess. Maybe we call it that. But he is a farmer, a local businessman, and he is really an oil and gas expert. He also, he just runs a whole bunch of different companies and, runs a quantum physics lab as well. So we get a lot of good information from him. And our third player is Mike Ariza. He is was a technician, a plant operator at, Valero. So, all three of these guys come from different vantage points, and this is the fifth in a series that we have done with them. I'm sure it will not be the last program, but we have all of the shows posted. We have all of the papers that have been written, the letters that we're going to talk about from Valero or from Chevron and PBF. They are all online. If you go to gascrisis.org, you can click on all of that, read it for yourself. There are a lot of really excellent media articles and articles from USC that Professor Miché has there. We have so much information. I had to do a couple of drop-down. I had to put all the videos on one page because they were starting to get kind of voluminous. And the gas crisis media reports are on another page. It's all linked up. So I hope you will go and get educated. And now, I don't know who's starting off today. Professor, are you the one with the limited time frame? If so, we'll kick it to you. Unless somebody else has a better idea. Like anyone who's...
I didn't hear the professor on, but, you know...
Oh, okay.
You made a real error. You made a great comment. Well, is the professor there?
Well, I guess when he gets on there, he can pipe up. But
yeah.
Stan...
Yeah.
So yes.
Anyway, yeah, Eric, you made a great comment. The Iran conflict has nothing to do whatsoever with our price of oil and gas in what's going on here. You know, it's just very... This could be fixed so easily. Literally, get CARB to stand down, get the cap and trade to go away, and you have businesses that now want to stay and produce. I'm concerned we're going to lose more refineries. I'm concerned that we're not going to have any place to ship our crude. And with that insecurity now, you have producers reluctant to even go out and spend $1 million on a well to produce. And because where are you going to send it?
Yeah.
So we're in quite a conundrum here right now.
So, I don't know when you want to get into the PBF and the Chevron letters, but I don't. I'm sure that none of that made the national news, of course.
Yeah, of course. Of course not. Because you know, we're California, we're an island. And it's just so frustrating that I think we're going to need federal intervention. Because obviously the state isn't going to do anything about it.
Yeah, isn't it terrifying that the federal government will come and save us?
Yeah, that's pretty sad, isn't it?
I mean, it just seems kind of crazy, actually.
I'm telling you, the thing. Go ahead.
Hello, everybody. Professor Mishay finally joined us here. I finally made it.
Nice. Are you pushed for time?
A little bit, but I always have time for you, Aaron.
Because
you play great rock music, so hey,
I have new songs for you today.
Okay.
You know, as it turns out, those breakup songs, the bad girlfriend songs, also kind of fit with this gas thing.
Yeah, well, yeah, they do, and they align a lot with a lot of memories in my life too. So
there you go.
No, we have made the national news. PBF letter and Chevron letters have made the national news. They were on Fox. They were on Fox the last few days. They were on Fox in the morning. Fox Business Show, not necessarily Fox News.
They were on the news feed this morning. News. We heard it this morning.
On there. Yeah, and then, you know, I think the problem with, I don't think there's a problem with the federal government coming in here to fix this because that's what we've been calling for. I mean, you know, when you take a look at California, I think I call it the three N's, you know, incompetent, incapable, and insensitive. And so, you know, they're oblivious to the impact of these price increases on people that are marginalized, aren't fixed incomes, are working two or three jobs, all in the name of climate change and a better environment, which we're all for. But let's face it, California accounts for less than 1% of total greenhouse emissions globally. I mean, really, putting the economy through this type of shock is questionable action.
Yeah, and so for people that were not watching the Business Channel, explain to them what are, you know, spoiler alert, some of the messaging of PBF Energy and what that means to us.
Yeah, I'll take a shot at that, and then Mike and Stan can fill it in with all the color. But in a sense, what's happened, so in California, if a refinery wants to shut down, it has to issue a one-year letter, notice of 1 year, okay, which says, okay, a year from now, I'm going to shut my refinery down. What PBF and Chevron did was issue a courtesy letter and and said, look, if these CARB amendments, the low carbon fuel standard, actually go through, they will have a detrimental impact on the California consumer because the price of gas could go up by at least a dollar a gallon, if not more. I think UC Davis, a public school, came up with $1.21 a gallon. So they said if these proposed amendments go through, we will be in a position where we are not profitable. It will cost us so much money to comply with these amendments, with the proposed amendments for CARB, that it just simply isn't profitable for us to operate, along with pretty much any other refiner in the state. And so basically what they did, and they were very clear about it, they put the state on notice, and they said, if you pass this, then we may, I'll emphasize the word,
issue a letter.
We may issue that one-year letter saying we are exiting the state. And when you're looking at a refinery such as Chevron and PBF, if we lose those three refineries, honestly, the game is over, because that's the majority of refining capacity in the state of California as it exists today. So it's a serious notice that both these refiners have provided.
Well, and there are a lot of them that still think that that Valero is up.
It's down, and we've said it's down, and we've talked about that. But I think Mike Ariza is going to give us some really good insight into that. So Mike, why don't you sort of tell us, you know, what your intelligence and your sources have told you?
Yeah, Roger that. One thing on the professor's point about the intent of Chevron and PBF. I was watching an interview with Jenny at ABC, and she asked, you know, did the good reporter thing and asked Mr. Walls with Chevron just flat out. So is Chevron really looking to close it down? And you know, normally when they're answering questions like that, it'll be, well, you know, we're kind of looking at this and that. He just came right back to her and said, yes. If things don't change, we're shutting down. Okay, there was no dancing around it. It was a straight up, we're done. And if they go down, we lose 86% of our crude oil capacity since 2023. 86% of our crude oil producing capacity is offline. Now with Valero, what's going on with Valero? They're shut down. They've been just shut down, just as we predicted in October when they canceled the crude oil contract that they were going to shut down. In January, in our meeting, I'd even mentioned December, and the professor said, you know, probably January. So it happened in January. They pulled feed from the crude unit in January. A couple days later, the professor got a confirmation that thermal imaging was showing the refinery's cold. And then on the 4th of February, I get a message from my friend Randy saying that the cat and the coker were down. So that means the whole refinery's down. So what they're at right now, is this is the last week the refinery is fully staffed. A lot of people left, like 30 people left when they announced they were going. Now they're on their last week of full staffing. So by the time you get into April, which is, and units are open right now. It's down, tanks, a lot of tamils, all the tanks are emptied, and units are open for clearing, basically for mothballing. And by the time we get to April, which is what the media keeps reporting, you know, we're going to shut down in April. By the time we get to April, the refinery is only going to have 20 people, where it used to have almost 500. And the only units that will be operating is the wastewater treating plant, the tank farm, and then the dock. Because what they're doing right now is they're working to see what they can do to convert the refinery into a terminal.
And a terminal would just be receiving and storing?
Receiving, storing, and then using their equipment that they use now to ship out to Kinder Morgan, out to the main distributing hub on the pipelines out in the Bay Area, and then going from there. But, you know, when I went to San Francisco, picked up my wife a couple weeks ago, there were so many tankers parked out in the bay. It was ridiculous. But yeah, you lost about 400 jobs directly associated with the refinery gone, and the vulnerability now. We'll be importing. If those refineries go down, and another thing my friend told me yesterday when I was talking to him is Valero, just, they're pissed. They're absolutely pissed. They are so disgusted with this state. That's, you know, you get that from the middle management passed down from the upper management. They're just totally disgusted with California. And I got a feeling, and the professor might speak a little more to this, but the Valero Wilmington refinery, I think along with these PBF refineries and the two Chevron refineries, you very well may next year or not too soon afterwards see Valero shut down its Wilmington refinery. Then we'll be down to one.
And so let's take a really quick break on that super unpleasant note. And we'll be right back with the fellas. You can find all this and all the backstory and the things we're referencing at gascrisis.org, but you are listening to We the People Radio, and you can find that site at wethepeopleradio.us.
No further exemption. Just a big red goodbye and lipstick on the wall. Goodbye says it all. No long explanation. No reconciliation. No let's talk it over number I can call. Goodbye says it all. Who's gonna tell you things aren't so great? You can't go on thinking nothing's wrong. Gonna drive you home tonight.
Great song.
Well, no one, because there's no gas. Mm-hmm. So goodbye says it all.
Got a scooter.
I like the goodbye written in lipstick on the mirror. I was thinking, you know, Chevron might want to do that.
Yeah, I've seen that a few times.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of funny, but like all the bad girlfriend songs were like, oh man, that'll work. That's a good one. Oh, I don't listen to the radio anymore for music. I listen for you guys. Like, does this make sense?
Well, we appreciate that. But think about this for a second, right? You have Valero, which is the surviving refineries down here in Southern California, and their CEO stated publicly and in Wall Street analyst meetings that they intend to operate that refinery through the end of the decade. So it's already halfway through 2026. You're looking at 27, 28, and 29. But I think that the interesting aspect of that refinery is, if I'm not mistaken, it's up for a major turnaround in the next year or two. And so you have to ask the question, since they've already written off over $1.1 billion of assets in the state of California, that refinery is off the balance sheet right now. Would it make sense, would it make prudent economic sense or financial sense for them to do a turnaround and invest hundreds of millions of dollars only to operate it for another 1 or 2 years? And so one has to take that into consideration when we do our planning for production of gasoline and jet fuels in the state of California.
Jeez.
Sorry, my phone call dropped real quick. I just wanted one more thing on Valero in particular. Okay, Valero, to get rid of sulfur dioxide and particulate emissions that had been going out the main stack for 4 decades with no problem, they spent $700 million on two brand new furnaces. They ripped out the old ones, some precipitators, a waste gas boiler, an MEA scrubbing system to get rid of that slippage of SO2 and particulates. So they took, you know, basically nothing was going to the atmosphere at all. So, you know, you got a company, they invested, and again, they don't own crude oil. They invested $700 million to comply with what the state wanted them to do as far as these emissions were concerned. And then they got hammered with that fine on the hydrogen generation unit, which is the cleanest unit in any refinery. So, Those are some of the reasons why Valero is just basically disgusted with the state, and San Antonio said, okay, we're done.
Well, you kind of have to. So do these guys, Chevron and PBF, so between the two of them, they're talking about four of the seven remaining refineries. Do I have that right?
Yes.
Okay, so let's say the California Air Resources Board comes back and says, we've decided we're not going to change. Before I go down the road, though, so the cap and trade fees or tax or whatever you want to call it that they have to pay, the main problem is that the companies that are bringing these fuels, like by ship from wherever, India, China, Russia, wherever it's coming from, they don't pay them. Only the guys refining here in the state. So it's just a massively unfair, I don't know if it's considered a tax or a fee, probably a fee, I guess is what they would call it. But what are the odds that they'll back off on that? What do you guys think?
Well, I think from the state legislator standpoint, I've been advocating for this for a while now. Obviously, you know, Professor Mish and Mike Ariza and myself brought this to the attention of the public about 6-8 months ago. And the answer is you have to give them some monetary relief because they're spending so much money on abatement equipment and emissions equipment. And now you put a tax on what they put out in CO2 and carbon monoxide and nitrous oxide. And so all of a sudden, it's just compounded into hundreds of millions of dollars a year per refinery. It's just impossible to operate. And furthermore, it's not just the refineries that are paying. It's anybody that has any types of emissions, cement plants, all types of industry that burn natural gas that are falling into this cap and trade, it's killing California. And it's a bad, bad program. And I'm telling you, all of this crisis right now is self-induced. There is no one to blame other than our own legislature and our own administration. Everybody wants to try to blame Trump. I hear it on the legislative floor every day. Well, this is Trump's fault. No, this is our fault in the state of California. There is no one to blame but ourselves. And the only way we're going to fix it is to get less regulation and get rid of cap and trade for the long term. If that happens, you would actually attract business. But nobody, everybody wants to leave for obvious reasons. It's self-induced. I'm sorry, Mike Ariza said that everybody's pissed. Well, you think they're pissed up there? You ought to see Kern County, where we were the fifth largest oil producing county in the nation. We're upset. Our industry, our livelihood, thousands and thousands of jobs are at risk, and that goes to our GDP. So we're killing ourselves. Sorry, I'm a little fired up right now.
No. The good news is somebody in the legislature's fired up.
Yeah, it's good to see my friend Stan Ellis fired up, because Stan's a smart man and he's got the best interest of the state in mind and in his heart. But let's carry the math out a little bit further, because I know Stan loves math. He was a math major, brilliant, by the way. Let's just say, for example, two points I want to make. First one's an easy one. A study done by University of California, I think it was the Center of Public Policy and Labor, calculated the impact of Benicia on Contra Costa County. And the impact, the economic impact, both direct and indirect, because we're economists, we count for both, is somewhere around $972 million a year in lost economic activity and revenue. Almost $1 billion. A third of that is direct, two-thirds of that would be indirect. And so the question then becomes, when you lose these refineries and you lose $1 billion a year in economic activity, how will you make that up?
Exactly.
How are you going to make that up? And nobody, as far as I know, no one in the legislature stand. I mean, I don't want to speak for you, but as far as I know, nobody has come forward in the legislature and said, "Oh, let's, you know, if we build a battery plant, we'll replace that in a heartbeat." Yeah, no, I haven't heard that.
And that money that they're taking in, obviously they're spending it all. Either I don't know what they spend it on, wages, programs, whatever. But if they're not going to make that up, there's going to be some real hardship in that county. That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money. You know, in Benicia itself, we know the city's losing 20% of its tax base as a result of that closing. How's Benicia? You know, with no disrespect to Benicia, I've been there, and it's not a, you know, it's probably not a place where a lot of people, you know, are sitting in Kansas or Texas and say, gee, when I move to California,
I want to move to Benicia. Yeah.
Right, you know, it just doesn't.
It's kind of windy
it
there.
It doesn't rise to that. Yeah, it is windy. And then the second thing. So let's play out the PBF and Chevron letters a little bit, okay? And let's just say that indeed Chevron and PBF pulled the plug. I'm not saying they are, and I have no inside information. I'm just playing devil's advocate and creating a scenario. If indeed they did that, and they did it, say, by the year 2029, 2030 at the latest, I would think 2029, even earlier, 2028 maybe, we would lose from 2023 to 2000, whenever they pull the plug, 76% of all in-state refinery capacity.
Jeez.
76%. And that'll be an absolute impossibility to import that much gasoline, given the current infrastructure. So, you know, if indeed these refiners do pull out, irrespective of, you know, what somebody in an ivory tower might be saying up in Sacramento, particularly in the CARB offices, we will be losing 76% of production since 2023. And we all know that gasoline consumption is not going to come down by 76%.
No.
It's coming down at about 2%, slightly less than 2% a year. The 2025 numbers just came out from the California Department of Taxation and Franchise Fees and Administration, right? So it was a modest decline of like 1.7% from 2024. So, you know, we're not seeing these revolutionary declines. And think about that. If we lose 76% of refinery capacity, it is no way the state can import that amount of fuel unless it completes the pipeline by 2029 coming in from Arizona, which we all know is a noble aspiration, but probably will face an endless amount of lawsuits and litigation. Yeah, so... So as Stan points out, and I will be making that, releasing that number on the 18th of March, what the potential impact might be on California GDP with the loss of these refineries.
Well, and also 76%, that's a number you're not going to make up by cutting back on your usage and, you know, conserving. You can't do 76% that way. We've got to produce it, or there are going to be hardships. There's going to be, I mean, we had, what, shortages in the 80s? Is that when they had gas lines and whatnot? It'll make that look like a picnic.
Oh, yeah. But here's the difference, and Mike Ariza brought this out a few times in conversations, and you know, if I can paraphrase it, what the difference there was that we were short oil, but we weren't short refinery capacity. So when the oil started to flow again, we had plenty of capacity to make gasoline and recover relatively quickly. But what we have now, though, is even if we had the oil, if we lose these refineries, doesn't really matter.
Has anybody talked about getting rid of this summer blend, winter blend, California blend? I mean, that would really relieve a lot, wouldn't it, if we burn the same fuel as everybody else?
Well, okay, so you need to bifurcate that because you have the summer blend, you have the blends, the seasonal blends, and then you have the low carbon fuel standard for California special blend, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the summer and the winter blends, those are federal standards,
okay.
And they do have a positive impact on emissions and the quality of air and things like that due to ambient temperatures and barometric pressure and things like that. So the idea of having a winter and summer blend is actually a pretty good idea. The question you now have is that to what extent, given modern engines, remember this California fuel standard goes back to 1968 or something like that. Okay?
Right.
Given modern engines, modern drivetrains, the emission control that are on these cars today, does it make sense to have a low-carbon fuel standard that's completely different than the rest of the nation? That's question number one. And then question number two is, what is the marginal rate of return by changing that standard? So in other words, if indeed you're going to increase the price of gas by at least $1.20 and run the risk of running these refineries out of the state of California, in which case gas will be $20 a gallon. Does it make sense to do that? In the sense of, are you increasing the quality of air in the environment by a comparable, if not greater, amount? And I think most people will say the answer is, well, probably not. So a reasonable course of action, given where California is at, would be for the president and the EPA to step in and say, well, we'll suspend the low-carbon fuel standards and just adopt the uniform reformulated gasoline standard that's used across the country. That would open up refineries and supplies to California that have been closed off to the state because they don't make the low-carbon fuel standard. So that's why you have to go to Asia and India and all those places.
Well, Professor, and this actually question is for the professor and Mike Ariza. I am ignorant as to, you know, we're bringing in this product from India and South Korea and this finished product. Did those refineries spend billions of dollars to meet low carbon fuel standards? So what are we getting when we import these products? And in fact, are we meeting specs? And maybe we are, and maybe we aren't, but I don't know. So why would they spend billions of dollars to meet California specs? I think there's a responsibility here to look into that, and I'm going to take that action item. Professor, do you, Mike?
That's a great point.
I think you should. I think that's a very significant point.
It's a valid point. Yep.
Yeah, because these guys are basically just gross polluters, and
that's the thing that's so ironic about. About this cap and investment is you're penalizing refineries to the point where they're going to leave, but you're not charging these people that are the gross polluters. It's so hypocritical.
Well, we're literally outsourcing our schmutz at this point.
Yeah.
I don't have a song for that, darn it. We have to take a really quick break. I wish I had a good schmutz song. If anybody knows one, I want you to email it to me. But we'll be right back. So we're talking about the gas crisis in California. And before we close out this topic today, we're going to explain why you care about it, even if you don't live here. Because all the people who listen to this who don't live here are like, well, you guys are idiots. Why are you still there? But thing is, if we don't stay here and fight, it's kind of coming for you. As with all the bad things that start out here. It's like a contagion.
True.
The contagion. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Yes, these are some good times, so take a good look around. You may not know it now, but you're gonna miss this. You're gonna miss this. Yeah. Miss it.
cat was cold. He said, don't call us, child, we'll call you. I said, you got my number? He said, yeah, I got it. We walked in the door.
That's the next PBF letter. They're going to just send a musical clip. I shouldn't joke about this, but it's like you almost got
to have to.
Yeah, you
do. I mean, when you look at some of these decisions, they defy logic, and so at a certain point, you have to have a sense of humor.
Oh, yeah.
As dark as that might be and as sad as that might be, but I mean, at a certain point, they do define logic. And as Stan said, these are self-created. And as I said in my last year, I wrote that report on price gouging. And I said, you know, these are all self-inflicted wounds that the state has created for itself.
So we plumbed Stan on this one a while back, that the people in the legislature will say, privately, that this is a problem, but publicly won't go against the governor or their party. And so in a deal like that, no one in this state, I'm guessing here, but no one in this state is going to rein in the California Air Resources Board.
That'd be a pariah.
Is that right?
You're right.
That's sad because I think of anything, you know, it's time for a DOGE approach to California, some of these California agencies. I think a strong governor, whoever that might be, should come in and take a very, very serious look at pretty much every agency, including CARB in particular and the CEC in particular, and say, what's the cost and what's the benefit to the California taxpayers? What are they truly, truly doing? And one of the things we know that CARB doesn't do is when they pass regulations, they don't do an assessment of the cost of that regulation
of the damage.
So no,
that's
yeah,
right, damage.
Yeah. So I know that there's a bill pending on that. That's going to be presented before the legislature. But it only seems reasonable that if you're going to pass a piece of legislation, that you should at least do the cost benefit study. And tell the legislature, okay, this is the benefit, this is the cost, and this is the cost to the general public, and this is what it will do to inflation. This is what it could do to GDP. I think these are just reasonable things to ask. But CARB has consistently denied having the role to do that, and they have hidden behind, and I've seen this in testimony. It's impossible to predict the market; it's too volatile. Well. Then if you don't want to predict it, then hire three or four different universities and let academics come up with it and present their findings to the legislature.
I've requested an audit of CARB, and then on the note of my colleagues, sincerely some really good people. I'm down in the people bashing business, and I'm trying to stay non-political here. However, and I will tell you that I'm in conversations with the CEC, great folks, caught between a rock and a hard spot. They want to do something, but they're, again, caught between an administration that won't help them. They have some of the answers, but they're in a tough spot. So ultimately, it does get political. From where I'm sitting, let's fix the problem, because we're problem solvers. The Problem Solvers Caucus that I'm on all see the same thing. They want to help. It's a nonpartisan group of folks. They've made recommendations, but we don't see any action. All we've seen is lip service, which is typical since I've been in the legislature. All we get is lip service. It's really, really frustrating. But I would tell you that my colleagues on the other side of the aisle see the problem. They acknowledge the problem. And some of them are trying to do something about it. So,
what would that look like? What does that look like? So, if they're trying to do something about it, but they're not really willing to speak out about it publicly, how would that even happen?
Well, they're letting me carry the... They're letting me be the bad guy.
Our friend Stan. Our friend Stan will help us.
Yeah, so there... And I've built some great relationships there. And so... And it is about... It's like business. You build relationships. Sure. I've done the same thing there. And so I have some support. And so I'm fighting... I'm going to audit CARB. There's some legislation about CARB, making sure that they do an analysis on how does this, what is the cost and the impact of the public. So there are some, and like on CEQA reform, a lot of my colleagues now are fired up about CEQA and getting them, in check and not having the stringency of CEQA. So they're seeing it, but the problem is it's not fast enough.
Yeah.
We need to do something now.
Right.
We can't wait for legislature and bureaucracy and government to fix the problem. But I'm telling you, with the stroke of a pen, our governor could fix the cap and trade problem, and he could fix CARB.
So
now we could
do it now.
So what
we could,
what could he do? What exactly would that look like? What does that look like?
I think it would be executive action, but I'm not sure because I'm not that much of a politician yet, trying to be the public servant. I don't know what that looks like.
Okay.
The governor could invoke executive action. He could, for example, with the stroke of a pen, probably reduce the state excise tax, which is 62 cents a gallon. He could reduce that overnight. It's the highest in the country.
Well, that's right. I forgot about that.
He could take 30 cents off of that just by saying... or suspend it. I'm not suggesting we eliminate it. I'm suggesting we suspend it for a period of time until we have more clarity on these gasoline prices and the supply. You could do that. You could also begin to address cap and trade. There are a number of studies, and the cap and trade numbers are all over the place, and you can't get them from CARB. So, one study, I think that was from University of California, Davis, I think had it at $1.21 a gallon. University of Pennsylvania had it up to $1.48 a gallon. I had it at 68 cents a gallon. I guess I'm the most conservative. So we're not really sure what this cap and invest program actually is going to cost, but we all agree it's going to cost a lot more. So whether it's 68 cents a gallon or $1.48 a gallon, it's going to cost a lot more. Well, the governor could say, you know what, maybe we're rushing that program. But, look, he's not going to do that because, well, he needs to fund the high-speed rail project. 25% of cap and trade goes into that thing. So, there's conflicting objectives here. But I think people like Stan and your show are perhaps bringing those conflicting objectives out into the public domain, and perhaps people are beginning to appreciate them a little bit more.
Yeah.
And let's throw this out there with gasoline, okay? If Mr. Walsh from Chevron said that they supply 60% of SFO, Oakland, 60% of SFO, and they supply jet fuel to all the other airports, San Jose, Oakland, SAC, and the PBF said they supply 40% of San Francisco's fuel. So those two shut down, zero fuel for SFO, and more than likely zero fuel for Oakland, Sacramento, San Jose, Travis, McClellan, all these different bases, no fuel. And once those two are down in the Bay Area, there are no refineries in Northern California that will be producing jet fuel, none. They're gone. And then same thing down south. I think El Segundo and the PBF refinery down there supply something like 60 or 70% of the fuel for LAX. So these are other things. So we got the big threat to the military with no jet fuel, very, very little jet fuel production at all in the state. And then the diesel production is going to crater. They're going to have a hard time with all the problems with trucks right now getting food into cities. Cities have 3 or 4 days of food supply. That's all they have. You're going to have a hard time getting food into cities to keep feeding people. This is the real danger we're in. This is what we, as a team, me and the professor and Stan, we had all, you kept speaking about this. Besides storms and other things that can affect California world event, and then California, the condition California has got itself in to where it can't recover. So we're in a real dangerous situation. And I mean, I watched that interview with Mr. Waltz. He wasn't messing around. He just flat out, no, we're ready to leave. We're done.
So let me bring up a point that we don't mention very much. You know, every one of us want clean air, and every one of us want clean water and a nice clean environment. But what has happened here is the environmental groups that are so happy to sue about anything and funded from covert operations like China and Soros and all these companies, they come in and they sue and they sue and they sue and they sue. So what it's done, it's driven our present administration to a point where all they want to do is talk about greenhouse gas and a reduction of greenhouse gas and a greenhouse gas agenda. What it's done, I hate pointing fingers and blame, but if there's someone responsible, it's our environmental groups that are extremists and they're terrorists, and they have driven our state oil and gas sector into a dire strait. And then, of course, guess what? We have an administration that buys off and wants to satisfy them, doesn't want to go against them, and every time you turn around, we have a lawsuit. So ultimately, if you go right to the root of the problem, that's where it starts. But it is our fault administratively as a legislative body to keep that in check, and we have not. Sorry.
I think the part that's actually kind of funny and crazy all at once is Tom Steyer running for governor. His ad, I don't catch ads all that much, but I did catch and I backed up. I backed up and watched it again, and it's like, did he just say that he has, like, I don't know, I don't think he said single-handedly, that's what I heard in my snarky head, was that he had, like, single-handedly crushed big oil, and I thought, oh, when people are paying $10 a gallon, I'm thinking his gubernatorial odds are going to go way down. I mean, that's stupid. They're still bragging about that.
Yeah, they shouldn't be driving an electric car that's 122,000 miles neutral before it comes carbon neutral. They shouldn't ride a bicycle because of the rubber tires and the butyrene. They shouldn't brush their teeth because of the glycol. It's like these people are just hypocrites.
Oh, totally. Yep. Totally.
Yeah, and there, I mean, there's an element of mental illness to this that really can't be avoided because you can't explain logically why they're not taking care of it. I mean, when they're talking about this, Stan, in the legislature, and they see this giant bullet coming for the public, is this like ducks? They look fine on top, but their feet are moving really fast under the water, or is the bottom the same as the top? Like, they're just coasting along.
There are a few of my colleagues that are very serious and are actually signing on. The folks from the big, huge metropolitan areas that are greenies and greenie-driven are, on the surface, like you say, will talk to me, but when it comes to the really getting and digging in, they back away really fast.
And their constituents are going to be the ones that are suffering the most.
They want to blame it on affordability, and they want to blame it on Trump. Nobody will stand accountable. I'm accountable. I'm in there. We should all be held accountable. But they don't want to be held accountable for any crisis. They want always, if you listen, they always shift the blame. There's always blame. There's always blame. Let's shift the blame.
Yeah.
I'm accountable. I stand accountable for my constituents. And I have many, many people come up to me in the oil and gas sector because I was in it, and a lot of my friends, and they're ranting and raving and said, why can't you do something? Why can't you do something? I'm trying. I'm working as hard as I can to try to make something happen in the state legislature.
I don't know how they can look at everybody and realize that this is coming and just, I don't know, let it slide.
Well,
it's crazy,
Aaron,
to me.
They would rather stand up in session and do a resolution on Butterfly Day and Rice Day,
yeah,
and all these other things that, and you know, Friday, Thursday.
Okay, hold that thought. Tell us on the backside of the news. We will be right back.
Okay.
You're listening to We the People. You can find us at WeThePeopleRadio.us.